Welcome back to the Grey Lodge. Today we'll explore the symbolism of dreams manifesting into realities through Laura's diary and Gordon Cole's painting of corn. That's right. We're going to hear about Mr. C and Audrey Horn. Where's Audrey? Diane visits Mr. C. Dougie unleashes his inner cobra and the Roadhouse gets a thorough cleaning. Join me today as we discuss Twin Peaks The Return, Part 7. There's a body, all right. Starts out, Jerry's in the woods. He's high. All right. It's fine. Moving on. We're at the Twin Peaks at the Sheriff's Department. Hawk is showing Sheriff Truman the pages that he found in the bathroom that were ripped out of Laura Palmer's secret diary. This is from the one at Harold Smith's place that they previously had found was missing pages. There's still one missing, by the way. Okay. And this is the part from Fire Walk With Me, if you recall, when Annie showed up in Laura's bed and told her to write down that Dale was trapped in the lodge. Of course, these events took place before Laura Palmer even died, which was before Dale Cooper even showed up to Twin Peaks. Because the timelines get a little weird, all right? So Hawk explains his theory to Sheriff Truman that he thinks Leland had these pages that he ripped out of the diary and he hid them in the bathroom, because one of the pages basically talks about how Laura knew what Leland was up to. Take a listen.
This is what I found.
From Laura Palmer.
Yeah.
This came to me in a dream last night. My name is Annie. I've been with Dale and Laura. The good Dale is in the lodge and he can't leave. Write it in your diary, unquote. Dale is in Special Agent Dale Cooper?
Right.
What do you think this means?
I don't know, but I'm sure this is what the log lady wanted me to find. I think that Annie is Annie Blackburn, a girl that went into that place.
And these pages are for sure from Laura's diary.
Yeah, these are from her diary, the diary found at her friend Harold Smith's. These are three of the four pages that we saw were torn out, missing. And there's still one missing.
And how do you think they got here, inside our bathroom stall door?
I'm not sure, but look at this.
It's 1:30 a.m. I'm crying so hard I can hardly breathe. Now I know it isn't Bob. I know who it is.
I'm sure it was Leland who hid these pages. He found them and realized that she knew.
I remember this. Leland Palmer, her father. When do you think he hid these?
I don't know. Leland came into the station several times. Once around that time, we brought him in for the questioning of the murder of Jacques Renault. Maybe he thought we were going to frisk him, and that's when he hit him.
Laura never met Cooper. He came here after she died, didn't he?
She said that these words from Annie came to her in a dream. This thing she said, the good Dale is in the lodge and can't come out. But Harry saw Cooper come out of the lodge with Annie that night. Doc and Harry took him over to the Great Northern. But if the good Cooper is in the lodge and can't come out, then the one who came out of the lodge with Annie that night was not the good Cooper.
And he left town soon after. Who else saw him that day?
Well, like I said, Doc Hayward, but I don't know who else.
Let's bring Harry up to speed, see what he thinks.
Now, just to reiterate, Laura never met Dale Cooper, besides in the dream world. She wrote it down because of the dream, and then it manifested into reality. Now, Hawk deduces that if the good Cooper is in the lodge and stuck there as prophesied by Annie into Laura's diary, then the Cooper that came out, aka Mr. C, is evil Cooper. So they put a nice bow on it. In case anyone's confused about what's going on in the storyline, I know I sure was the first time I watched all of this, but they spell it out pretty clearly that Mr. C is evil Cooper from within the lodge. So again, this goes back to Fire Walk With Me, you know? The dream world blurring with the real world, a common theme of Twin Peaks, I know, but this is one of the major sort of plot elements. And they decide they want to talk to Dr. Hayward, since Dr. Hayward was one of the last people to see Dale Cooper, a.k.a. Mr. C, a.k.a. Evil Cooper, before he had left Twin Peaks. So, yeah, and again, we're missing one page still. All right? Will we find it? I don't know. I actually don't remember. It's been a long time since I watched this. Okay, so Andy, he finds the truck that Richard Horn, we now know it's Richard Horn, the creepy kid, Richard Horn hit that boy. Well, Andy found the truck. The owner says he can't talk about it. He's acting real frantic. He's like, Andy, I can't talk to you right here about it. I don't know why. I think he's scared of Richard Horn or something. And he tells Andy, I'll meet you at Sparkwood in 21, which, by the way, is also where Laura Palmer jumped off of James's bike, and it was the last time she was seen before she was murdered. Why is this guy bugging out? I don't know. Meanwhile, Frank Truman in the sheriff's office, he is going to Skype Dr. Hayward. Now, I've got an image here. Check out the Instagram, at Isaac Weishaupt on Instagram. Like and subscribe. Behind Frank Truman, you can see an owl. All right, another owl to throw in the mix. So he calls up Dr. Hayward. He's a hunt and peck typer, by the way. Very inefficient way of typing. And Frank asks Dr. Hayward what he remembers about the day that Cooper came back from Glastonbury Grove. Take a listen to what he says.
Remember way back when the night Harry called you in to examine Special Agent Dale Cooper at the Great Northern?
I can't remember what I had for breakfast this morning, but I remember that.
Tell me what you remember.
Well, we all knew Coop that morning he was acting mighty strange.
And?
I took him to the hospital, and I had him checked out while I made my round. About an hour later, saw him sneaking out of intensive care, fully dressed. He turned, and he looked at me, and saw that strange face again. I called out to him. He didn't say a word. He just turned around and walked out.
What was he doing in intensive care?
I thought at the time he might have been looking in on Audrey Horn. That terrible business at the bank, and she was in a coma.
Dr. Hayward said that Cooper went to the hospital, but he got up and walked out. But he also saw him in the ICU. And Dr. Hayward thinks maybe he was checking in on Audrey Horn, who was in the coma from the bank explosion. Because that all happened, you know, the same day? Yeah, 2 days apart. So, to put all that together, Evil Cooper, Mr. C, went into Audrey Horn's room when she was in a coma. What was he doing in there? We can only guess at this point. All right? Now, Lieutenant Knox from the Air Force, she's visiting the South Dakota Buckhorn Police at the morgue there to investigate the fingerprints of Major Briggs. Remember, the Air Force was kind of like, another hit. It's like all the other times. It's just a big nothing burger. Well, they realize that the prints were lifted from the actual body, which they have in their possession, and it's the male torso that was in the bed of Ruth Davenport with Ruth Davenport's head. And we hear that he was in his late 40s, but as we hear on the show, Briggs would have been in his 70s, so that doesn't make a lot of sense. Unless Briggs is a time traveler. So Lieutenant Knox confirms that this age discrepancy doesn't make sense since he actually just died a couple days ago. And while she's on the phone with whatever her boss is named, the dude from Ghostbusters, a man walks in covered in soot, head to toe, solid black and dirt. A woodsman, if you will. He walks into the morgue. What is he doing there? We don't know. Then they show us Gordon Cole's office. And you see he's got a couple pieces of artwork in the office. One is a painting or an image of corn. And another one is of the nuclear explosion, which a recurring theme. Presumably the Trinity site. We've talked about this countless times in the past. It was in Eraserhead, you know, so his first film was, he was talking about this. And the next episode, we're going to really talk about it. So let's talk about corn today. Corn has quite an influence in the world of Twin Peaks. Of course, we've got the Garmin Bogia, the creamed corn, which we've talked about ad nauseum at this point. In The Secret History of Twin Peaks, we heard about the Maury Island incident of the one of the original UFO crashes from 1947 that Harold Dahl retrieved pieces of a UFO. And they got transferred around in a cornflakes box. But I don't think this is what Twin Peaks' corn is all about. All right, knowing Mark Frost's affinity for the occult, particularly theosophy. So I looked it up for theosophy, and on theosophytrust.org, they have a whole article about corn. All right. It's connected to the Native Americans and their belief in corn as a symbol of fertility or a symbol of the gods or the nature of reality or something like that. It's kind of a long article. I'm going to read you a couple bits from it that I think are relevant. To the Indians of the New World, spiritual life and the life of flesh were reflecting counterparts of one another in that midmost place. The breath of spirit breathed in the corn like the Mayan wife who blows on her kernels before grinding them into meal. Wherever corn grew in the Americas, it was held by the people to be the symbol of life and fertility. It was the flesh of man and that which sustained him, but it was the gift of the Father, and its multicolored glory was cherished as the endlessly varied expression of his beneficence. It was the spirit of the seed of eternal life, and frequently the umbilical cord of a newborn child was cut over an ear of corn. All right, so the Native Americans, the indigenous people, they looked at it as a gift from the gods. Furthermore, it says, when cornmeal is offered in prayer, it is an offering of the flesh, but being a divinely created food, it is also a sign of spiritual thanksgiving. In the duality of its symbolic nature, it unites the male and female principles. Just as the tassel drops its pollen upon the lifeline of the silk that leads to the ovule within the ear. Containing all that is necessary for generation, corn was believed to be the very shape taken by the ancestors of man. And it goes on to discuss how corn is a symbol of life in both spirit and flesh. Which, that's where I think a lot of this goes, is maybe spirits trying to incarnate or manifest into reality through the Garmin Bogia, something like that. And the article lays out how corn symbolizes the evolution of man into one connected being, or at the minimal, egalitarian society, equal rights. But it's interesting because in the article they talk about it manifesting through dreams and those that can interpret the dreams. A realization of the great potential that lies ahead requires vision seekers who are taught, like the Ojibwa, to dream and interpret dreams, and who can recognize the universal sacrifice that is ever made by spirit so that the world's seed may grow. Such visionaries will intuitively perceive the importance of a correct balance between the powers of the male and female forces operating in human life so that true justice can be served and a sense of balance and harmony with nature can emerge. Vision and tolerance and adaptability belong to all races and both sexes, and visionaries see only the sacrificial nature of spirit flowing through the changing forms of life. So, Korn, the takeaway to me, has a heavy symbolic significance in the realm of theosophy and the occult. You can take from it a variety of things. It talks about, it talks about all kinds of stuff. Maybe it represents an equal society, or in the darker occult sense, it's the goat with the bobs. The balance of the powers of the male and female forces. Is it good? Is it bad? Is it evil? Is it not? I don't know. I think it all depends on the context with which the people using the symbolism want to use it. My take from reading this specific article, I think it's more I'm talking about like an equal rights kind of vision, and Korn being a gift from the divine, from the gods. Okay. Now, how does that show up in the world of Twin Peaks? Like I said, I think the Garmin Bogia, which is a version of the Korn, which always is black when the Black Lodge spirits have it, they're trying to sort of take a gift of the gods and pervert it and manifest themselves into the real world. Anyway, Albert's back. He tells Gordon Cole that he met with Diane and she's being reluctant to help. So Cole's like, well, let's go to her place. So they show up to Diane's place. She's salty. Cole tells her that Cooper is in a prison in South Dakota, and her response is, good. Why is she mad at Cooper? We don't know. Cole and Albert don't seem surprised. So she must have always been kind of this way. But in the season 1 and 2, with all the recordings from Cooper, I don't know. It doesn't seem like she was a mean person, right? She seemed like a consort to Cooper, like a nice lady. I don't know. So Albert tells Diane they need her to go to South Dakota to size up Mr. C to determine why he seems so off. They get on a private jet, as the FBI does, and Tammy analyzes the fingerprints of Mr. C versus Dale Cooper. And they realize the prints are reversed, which would make sense if Mr. C is Dale's doppelganger, kind of. Gordon even says Erev, the backwards word. Remember we talked about that in the last season 3, episode 4? When Mr. C said, Erev, very nice to meet you. So Cole picked up on all that. And Tammy, she starts to inquire. She's like, what are you guys talking about? Because she's not read in on Blue Rose yet, okay? And Cole doesn't exactly tell her what it means, but he does this little charade with her hand and tells her that the left ring finger is the spiritual mound, which all sounds very sort of, you know, Native American lore-ish. And they show a photo of Mr. C at one of his homes in Rio, which I don't know if that's close to Buenos Aires, but it's presumed that those things are connected. So they get to the prison, and Diane's still being real salty. Tammy says something to her, and she says, what's your name? What's your name? And she goes, Tammy. And she goes, she's like, fuck you, Tammy. And then she meets Mr. C, and she insists that she goes in alone. And things aren't going well. Take a listen.
I knew it was going to be you. It's good to see you again, Diane.
Oh, yeah? When was that, Cooper? When did we see each other last?
Are you upset with me, Diane?
What do you think?
I think you're upset with me.
Diane. When was the last time we saw each other, Cooper?
At your house.
That's right. Do you remember that night?
I'll always remember that night.
Same for me. I'll never forget it. Who are you?
I don't know what you mean, Diane.
Look at me. Look at me.
She asks him when he saw her last. Mr. C responds by asking if she's upset with him. She asks again, and he says, at your house. She references that night like something significant happened, and she asks him, who are you? She's not playing games. She knows that's not Cooper. She says, who are you? And he won't say anything, and then she says, look at me. And they look into each other's eyes, and she got all she needed. She shuts it down and walks out. Now, recalling Fire Walk With Me, there was that creepy scene where Leland Palmer is in bed with Teresa Banks before he kills her, and he covers her eyes, right? There's something about the eyes, the face, recognizing another's consciousness. That's all related here. So Diane tells Gordon Cole, look, that's not Dale Cooper. She can tell by something missing in his heart, is what she says. Meanwhile, Mr. C, he tells the corrections officers to relay a message to Warden Murphy that he needs to speak to him about a strawberry. Meanwhile, back in Twin Peaks, Andy gets stood up at Sparkwood and 21. His watch shows that it's 5:05. Significance? No clue. Back into Warden Murphy's office, Mr. C gets in there and he implies that he leaked some information that's important or incriminating about Warden Murphy that he got from Joe McCluskey about a late Mr. Strawberry. What are we even talking about? Okay. And then Mr. C says one of the dog legs that was in his trunk, because remember they said that when they pulled him over, he had a dog leg in his trunk. He said the other three dog legs were sent out to other people. And Mr. C threatens Warden Murphy to think twice about stopping him. He's like, remember the dog legs. Oh boy, what are we talking about? I don't know what's going on, but he's got Mr. C. Mr. C's got Warden Murphy by the short and curlies, if you know what I'm saying. And Mr. C requests a car rental with a friend in the glove compartment, a gun, and Ray Palmer. Oh boy, Ray's not out of the picture yet. Thank goodness. Meanwhile, in Las Vegas, Dougie gets a visit from the police. Again, he's obsessed with the badge because he's waking up, we think. We hope. I don't know. And they're looking into that exploding car. He tells them that it's stolen in his Dougie way of saying it. Dougie and Janie are... I kept writing Janie and it kept autocorrecting it to Janet. Dougie and Janie E are walking to the car, and here comes Ike the Spike. The little assassin's back. He comes at him. He's got a gun. But Dougie, shockingly, his inner Cooper comes out. And he puts him on some MMA moves and dismantles the whole thing. And takes the gun. And while he's got Ike the Spike in a chokehold, he gets a vision of the evolution of the arm screaming at him, telling him to squeeze his hand off. And Dougie, he's got Ike's gun and he's karate chopping his throat. It disarms him. And the event makes the news, and Janie E is like, excuse me? Right? And the witnesses, they say, that guy moved like a cobra. Dougie moved like a cobra. All right, these are all good things. Meanwhile, over at the Great Northern, Ben and his assistant Beverly, they hear this strange tone, and they can't quite track down where it's coming from. They kind of walk around the office, and Beverly tells Ben that a key came in the mail today. It's that key that Jade mailed off without the stamp. And he connects the dots that it was room 315 where Cooper was shot. And she's like, who's Cooper? And he's like, that's a long story. But these two exchange this close, longing look. Like they're about to, you know, get it on. They almost hook up, but then she stops short, and then that's it. So she goes home late from work. And we get a glimpse into Beverly's life. And it's sad. Terribly sad. Her husband, Tom, is very sick. He's in a wheelchair. He's got a caretaker while she's at work. And, you know, he misses his wife, Beverly. But unfortunately for him, he relies on her as a caretaker. And that's no position anybody wants to be in. And on top of this, he's upset. Like, she's late coming home from work. And he's kind of being a jerk to her. And she's mad. She's, like, pissed and that he's acting like this. And she says that he should be happy that she's got this job to pay the bills, because he can't. And how they're fortunate. And he needs to fix his attitude. Even though he's sick, he needs to get it together, right? And this feels very real. This feels tragically sad. Like, this is exactly how it would go down. Terrible, you know? Like, Tom was probably a great-looking dude back in his day. Beverly, you know, looking good. He's not able to show up that well. And she's got to take care of him. And, you know, he knows what's up. She's working for Ben Horn. Ben's a ladies' man. He knows what's up. And it's sad. It's sad for everyone involved. It's sad. I feel bad for Beverly. I feel bad for Tom. I feel bad for Ben Horn. Do I feel bad for Ben Horn? I don't know if I feel bad for Ben Horn. He's still on his journey, right? He's a good guy again. By the end of season two, we determined Ben's a good guy. So yeah, I feel bad for Ben. Also, there's a duck by the fireplace. You know, we see ducks throughout the whole show, predominantly in the opening credits of the pilot. So now we go to the roadhouse, and it's being swept up. A classic scene somehow. It's like 5 minutes of the song Green Onions playing while Jacques Renault's doing some bookkeeping and some guy's sweeping the floor. And Jean-Michel Renault, not Jacques. Jacques's dead, remember? But Jean-Michel answered the phone. It's Jacques, though. Come on. It's apparently his brother. And he's talking about... he picked up right where Jacques left off. Trafficking young girls. He had sent two blondes, and they're 15 years old. And he's disgusting like Jacques. He calls them straight A whores. What is going on here with the Renaults? They're terrible people. And we hear that the Roadhouse is owned by the Renaults. I didn't know that. That's news to me. But I guess the Renaults owned the Roadhouse this whole time. Back in South Dakota, Mr. C, he is in cell number 27. Recall 27 as the number of the 27 club. All right. 999. 9 plus 9 plus 9. The inversion of 666. And his cell door opens up and he steps out. So this blackmail he's been doing with the warden paid off. And he goes outside. Him and Ray meet up. They get escorted to this rental car just like Mr. C requested. Evil Cooper's on the loose again, okay? Then one last scene. We cut back to the Double R Diner. Someone frantically yells inside, if anyone's seen Billy. And that's it. That's the... who's Billy? Only Billy I know is Billy Zane, and he's long gone. But his name was actually John Justice Wheeler, so it wouldn't be Billy anyway. So there's a character named Billy lost. So, that's the end of this episode. Now, the next episode is is revered as one of the greatest episodes in all of Twin Peaks. Some say it's the best episode in all of Twin Peaks. Season 3, Episode 8, or The Return, Part 8. Got a light. I hope you're ready for it, and you're probably not. You're probably not ready for it. But I'm going to be ready for it. I got a lot of homework to do, so I got to get started because there's a lot to break down for the Got a Light episode, all right? This one's going to reveal a whole lot about the nature of what Twin Peaks is all about, what's going on in the realm of the occult, in the realm of the UFO phenomenon, all kinds of stuff. This one's going to blow your mind if you haven't seen it before. Hell, the first time I saw it, it blew my mind, but I didn't capture any of it. The second time, I was like, okay, I kind of get it. So join me for the third time. And as always, stay positive.